Thank you very much and good morning. And we must also welcome the representatives from the departments. And I think we should start with our meeting right away. I guess everybody has got their agenda there. Do we have any apologies?
Apologies received for Mr. Diale, Mr. Mbahlele, and Mr. Mpwango.
Thank you very much. Our next item is the presentation of the Parliamentary Legal Advice on the classification of the legislation as Section 75 legislation. I think that is the only major item that we have today on the agenda. I wonder as to whether we do have our legal advisors here. Thank you very much. Then can you then get to the business of your day?
Thank you, Honorable Chair, and good morning to yourself and the honorable members and the guests to your meeting. My name is Ndutuzelo Vanara. I'm the Senior Parliamentary Legal Advisor. I was tasked to look at the tagging of this particular bill, the Military Veterans Bill. Briefly, I deal with what tagging is. I deal with the difference between a Section 75 and a Section 76 bill. I deal with a test for tagging and apply the test to the bill itself and give a conclusion. The legal opinion was given to honorable members, and it is my understanding that same was distributed. Consequently, I am not going to go through the opinion verbatim, and I will follow the sequence that I have suggested. Now, Honorable Chair, the Constitution regulates the manner in which legislation introduced in Parliament must be processed by Parliament. It prescribes different procedures for bill amending the Constitution in terms of Section 74 of the Constitution, ordinary bills not affecting provinces, those would ordinarily be 75, and ordinary bills affecting provinces, Section 76 bills, and money bills in terms of Section 77. Now, tagging is a term used by Parliament for classifying bills that have been introduced at Parliament for purposes of determining the procedure such a bill needs to be followed in Parliament in its enactment. The principal difference between a 75 and a 76 bill, I'm not going to deal with a bill amending the Constitution and a money bill in terms of 74 and 77 respectively, as they are irrelevant for purposes of this exercise. It is imperative that we take note of what the Constitutional Court said in Expert President of the Republic of South Africa in reconstitutionality of the Liquor Bill. This is a 2000 case, Volume 1 SA 732. Justice Cameron, as he then was, remarked as follows with regard to the principal difference between a 75 bill and a 76 legislation. And I quote. It says, first, that is Section 76 bill or legislation give more weight to the position of the National Council of Provinces. This occurs chiefly through the invocation of the Mediation Committee. If one house rejects the bill passed by the other, or if one house refuses to accept a bill as amended by the other, the legislation must be referred to the Mediation Committee, which consists of 9 members of the National Assembly and 1 delegate from each provincial delegation. In other words, there will be 9 representatives of the National Assembly and an equal number, and 9 representatives of the National Council of Provinces in that mediation committee. That in itself balances the scale. There is no advantage given to either house. And the second issue is if the NCOP raises objection to a version of the bill approved by the mediation committee in circumstances where the bill was introduced in the National Assembly, the bill lapses unless the National Council, the National Assembly passes it again with a 2/3 majority. Now, the third difference is when the NCOP votes on a question under Section 75, that will be a bill not affecting provinces. The provisions of Section 65, in terms of which each province has a single vote in the NCOP, which is cast on behalf of the province by the head of its delegation, and in terms of which questions put before the NCOP are agreed with when at least 5 provisions of provinces vote in favor of the question, do not apply. Instead, in terms of Section 75, to each delegate in a provincial delegation has 1 vote, and the question is decided when the majority of votes cast, the presiding delegate having a casting vote subject to a quorum of 1/3 of the delegates. Now, that is the major difference between the procedure outlined in Section 75 and one that is outlined in 76. In other words, the court says when a bill affects provinces, provinces must have a say. And that say is achieved through their representatives in the national sphere of government, which is the National Council of Provinces. And that is done through the NCOP and the provincial legislatures participating fully on the bill, and secondly, having a determinative effect on the outcome of that piece of legislation. That situation is not the same in Section 75 legislation. I then move, Honorable Chair, to the test for tagging. The test for tagging was firstly outlined in the Liquor Bill case as a substantial measure measure test. Now, what substantial measure test means, I'll just get to that in a moment, but what is important, this is what the court in the Liquor Bill case said about the substantial measure test. It says the heading of Section 76, namely ordinary bills affecting provinces, provides a strong textual indication that Section 76, subsection 3, must be understood as requiring that any bill whose provision in substantial measure fall within a functional area listed in Schedule 4 be dealt with under Section 76. Now, what this means, Chair, if we go back to our Constitution in Schedule 4 of the Constitution, that is where concurrent national and provincial legislative competence areas are listed. In other words, we know that we've got national parliament, and we know that we've got provincial legislatures. Now, Schedule 4 then says clearly which areas can national parliament and the 9 provincial legislatures pass legislation on, that is, both legislatures. Then in Schedule 5, it reserves those functional areas specified in Schedule 5 of the Constitution as exclusive legislative competency areas for provincial legislatures. In other words, national parliament cannot legislate on those areas unless it is in terms of Section 44 of the Constitution, where the national parliament wants to maintain economic unity, it wants to maintain national security. Those are the exceptions. The court further went on to specify that whatever the proper characterization of the bill, this is important to note, a large number of provisions must be categorized as falling within a functional area in Schedule 4. In other words, when you look at the bill, you don't just see one provision that's making reference to those functional areas specified in Schedule 4, and you say this is a Section 76 bill. A substantial number, in other words, a large number of those provisions must deal with the functional areas listed in Schedule 4. Further, the effect of the provisions of the bill must be to such that they, in a substantial measure, again, affect those competency areas listed in Schedule 4. The Constitutional Court in May last year, in the Tongwana and others, Minister of Agriculture and Land Affairs, the Chief Justice had this to say in summarizing the substantial measure test. And I quote, he says, any bill whose provisions substantially affect the interest of the provinces must be enacted in accordance with the procedure stipulated in Section 76. This naturally includes proposed legislation over which provinces themselves have concurrent legislative powers, but it goes further. It includes bills providing for legislation envisaged in further provisions set out in Section 76, subsection 3, paragraphs A to F, over which the provinces have no legislative competence, as well as bills the main substance of which falls within the exclusive national competence, but the provisions of which nevertheless substantially affect the provinces. What must be stressed, however, is that the procedure envisaged in Section 75 remains relevant to all bills that do not, in substantial measure, affect the provinces. Now, this is what I like to emphasize. Whether a bill is a Section 76 is determined in two ways. Firstly, by the explicit list of legislative matters in Section 76, subsection 3, paragraphs A to F. And secondly, by whether the provisions of the bill in substantial measure fall within a concurrent provincial legislative competence. In other words, the test is two-folded. One, if we want to determine whether a bill is a 76 or not, in other words, it affects provinces, we need to look at what Section 76(3) provides from paragraphs A to F. Now, I'm telling you to apply the test to the bill. But before that, perhaps let me just indicate that 65(2) deals with the uniform procedure on how provincial legislatures confer authority to vote on their NCOP delegates. In other words, how do provincial legislatures confer mandates, be it negotiating or final mandates on their delegates in the NCOP. We've got the Mandating Procedures Act. That will be a type of legislation. Clearly, this bill does not deal with that. The second aspect, I think paragraph B, deals with Section 163. Now, Section 163 of the Constitution is national legislation that recognizes national and provincial organizations representing municipalities. Now, clearly, this bill does not deal with that. Section 182 regulates the functions of the public protector. Now, clearly, the bill, again, does not seek to regulate that. Section 195, subsection 3 and 4, detail the values and principles governing public administration. Now, the Military Veterans Bill does not deal with those issues. Section 196 deals with the Public Service Commission. Needless to say, the bill does not deal with it. And 197 deals with the public service. That will be the Public Service Act. And this bill does not deal with that. Now, on the first leg of the test, it is apparent that the bill, the Military Veterans Bill, cannot be tagged as a Section 76 bill on that ground. The only ground that's left is for a determination on whether the provisions of the Military Veterans Bill affect in a substantial measure the provisions or the legislative competency areas in Schedule 4 of the Constitution. Now, this then requires one to look at every clause of the Military Veterans Bill to see, one, whether they affect those areas, and secondly, the extent to which they affect the legislative competency areas in Schedule 4. The only clause in the bill that relates and does not deal, but it speaks to issues that are specified in Schedule 4, is Clause 5 of the bill. Now, if you look at Clause 5 of the bill, Clause 5 of the bill details benefits to which, and I want this to be underlined, qualifying, not every military veteran that is entitled to this, it's a qualifying military veteran, and his or her dependent, and subject to the availability, of course, of the resources, that needs to, that will be payable to that military veteran. And those include, that is the benefits, they include education, health services, housing, and public transport. Now, if you go to to Schedule 4, you'll see there that housing appears, education, public transport appears in Schedule 4. But the importance of this particular provision and the bill is that the bill does not seek to regulate housing, does not seek to regulate education, does not seek to regulate transport. In my reading of the bill, this is a benefit that the Department of Defense and military veterans provide to qualifying military veterans, and invariably, and this is what I normally say, that the Department of Military Veterans is like a government within a government, because you get all these, most of these services that government at large provides within one department. Now let's talk about health benefit. We know that the department has got military facilities in all over the country, but not in every city and town and rural area. It could be possible that it is envisaged that those people who are seated in rural areas, qualifying military veterans, who are entitled to health services being provided by the department cannot reach those people. The bill then says in those instances, the Minister of Defense could enter into service-level agreements with her counterparts in other departments. In this case, it will be the minister responsible for health to provide the service to the member. However, the department will have to reward financially the Minister of Health for providing that service, because the responsibility to provide the benefit resides with the Department of Defense. And consequently, it is my considered view, Chair, that the bill does not regulate these areas. And secondly, the issue that the bill deals with is the provision of a benefit. Now, a provision of a benefit is not a competency, is not a concurrent national and provincial competency area. And therefore, the bill, in my view, has been correctly tagged a Section 75 bill. I thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Mr. Banara. Do we have any comments from members or any addition? Honorable Khrunebad and Honorable Menera.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I went through the bill, and I've also read the opinion of the legal advisor. I just want to ask him one thing, and I agree with quite a lot of things, but there's one thing, because there's some grey area for me myself, and the bill is not clear on it. The bill is creating grey areas, and I've got many questions about it, but if you look at the bill, clause 7D7, it says the certain powers and duties of the department, it says so and so on, the department formulate programs which seek to promote the affairs of military veterans and submit proposals and recommendations to the relevant departments of state and provincial executive authorities. Now, I'm not quite clear how the department is going to make recommendations to the provincial executive. But my feeling is that if the provincial executive is involved here, then I have my question on the section 75. The provincial executive, they are getting involved in this. And then I start asking questions, shouldn't it be a 76? Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. It seems to me that on the second criteria, which I understand, let me qualify my remarks by thanking Mr. Vunara for his opinion. I always enjoy listening to his opinion, even if he thinks that I'm incorrect. But let me just say, it seems to me that on the second criteria, which is a substantial effect criteria, even although responsibility will reside with the minister, let's take in respect of a benefit like housing. If houses are to be delivered to military veterans, there still will be a substantial effect on provincial departments who are responsible for delivering those services in respect of their amending their strategic plans, putting resources, human resources, behind those projects and managing those projects. There will surely still be a fairly substantial effect on provincial housing departments, even although responsibility for the provision of those services, as you say, resides with the minister and is the consequence of a service level agreement. Does that not then mean, in fact, that on the second criteria, the bill really would be a 76 rather than a 75?
Mr. Varana?
Thank you, Chair. Perhaps it is important that from the onset that a statement be made that national legislation, when legislation passed by Parliament, directly or indirectly affect provinces. Well, whether we like it or not, you can't say, look, this legislation was not passed by my province, therefore it's invalid to, as far as it concerns me, and therefore it's not applicable to me. And that is this is what the court is trying to interpret as what is meant by affecting. Now, by affecting, the court says, affecting means the competency areas that are listed in Schedule 4. That is what the affecting means. I don't know if perhaps I've answered you, Honourable Member. Yes. Secondly, just as a ride on that, the bill does not again create obligations in that section that you've quoted. It says it is my considered view that this is how government operates in any event, that there is cooperation in different spheres of government. That's what the Constitution envisages. It emphasizes that there should be respect in terms of how the powers are allocated from to national, provincial, and then local government. But however, these people, I mean, these organizations should not function in isolation. They should collaborate and work closely together in ensuring that services are rendered. And this, in my view, that the department would not instruct these departments or provincial governments, but will just make proposals and recommendations. Coming to the second issue of Honorable Meunier, on the issue of affecting, I think that is the point that I'm making, that affecting really means the competency areas. In other words, the bill does not in itself seek to go and prescribe how housing will be dealt with and all those issues. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other comment or question from members? Honorable Madeleine.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson Mai, it's not a question, it's a comment. First, I want to welcome the presentation by the Parliamentary Legal Advisor, Mr. N. Varnara. And I want to thank him for this clarity on Section 75 and 76, which is now on this bill that of the military veterans that we are going to deal with. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, members. And if there is no any other thing, we can then move on to our next item. I want to, as part of the next item, I want to announce to the members that you remember that there were outstanding matters on this bill, especially on cost implications, that the department asked for a postponement and then referred the matter to the Speaker's office, and the Speaker's office referred to the matter to the ATC, which will be tabled today in the House. And but I also have a suggestion that because we need to get a submission from the public, maybe we should allow the, I understand nothing stops us to advertise for submissions. And then that will be the proposal that I give to you, Honorable Members.
Chairperson, on a technical point, I think there's no problem, but wouldn't it be advisable that if we publicize, because if we publicize, then the reactions or the submissions will be on the present bill, and the present bill doesn't include the financial implications. Shouldn't we first get the financial implications, that the public also know what the financial implications is going to be, and that we then get submissions and, or advertise for submissions? It's a suggestion.
There's another proposal from Honorable Groenewald. What are other members saying? Honorable Meunier?
Thank you, Chair. I do tend to associate my view with the Honorable Groenewald. I think that before we ask for public submissions, we should not only have the bill, but also a clear understanding what the cost implications will be. That will mean that the public then have an opportunity to comment on both the legislation and the cost implications or any other aspect of the bill. But crucially, it might be in our interest to hear from the department about the timeline. At how long will or does the department expect to be busy developing the costings for this bill? It might be in our interest just in making a decision about this to get some idea of the time frames. I mean, if the department are ready to brief us in the next couple of days, that's one thing, but if the costing of the bill is going to take several weeks or months, that's entirely a different matter.
Honorable Mazia.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I wouldn't have a problem that we proceed with the advertisement for submissions from the public, in the view that even though I understand the arguments raised by my colleagues, however, Chairperson, my view is that the very same public that is going to make submissions on the bill is the very same public that seeks to benefit from the bill, and hence I don't think the area of the finances is an area of an effect in the deliberations or in the submissions. I would also wish to know from the department what time frames do they give us to come up with those figures, so that when the public hearings are sitting, would by then have those figures, so that it allows participation to flow equally with the financial burden of the bill. Can you get an indication from the department as to what would be your position?
Chair, thank you, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members. We will be submitting, we expect that we will conclude the costing of the bill within a period of no more than a fortnight. We are in consultation with other departments of state, as well as the National Treasury, and also, more importantly, seeking expert advice from appointed actuaries to assist us with that. We would not want to come before the House to present a costing which we will not have sought concurrence with from the line function departments in terms of the benefits to be delivered. Most importantly, actually, especially National Treasury, and then to then see that we include this within the medium-term expenditure framework cycle. Cognizant also that there are some benefits that are already being delivered. It may not be to a great degree, but there are some benefits that are already being delivered. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Meneer.
Chair, given that the timeline, according to the Director General, is 2 weeks, I would then propose that we go ahead and advertise for public submissions.
Thank you very much. Then that will be done. And what will be our next meeting with the department? No, Chairperson, if I'm correct, we were just told that they will have the answers within a period of 2 weeks. And we think that, Chairperson, it lies on your communication with the department to then advise as soon as the department is available that we meet. Thank you very much, and that brings us to the end of our meeting, Honorable Members, and we will inform you as to when we are going to meet the department again. Thank you very much, and thank you very much, the DG and your staff. The meeting is adjourned.
They're going to end with the Thank you.